listening to the Daily Gold Podcast, covering precious metals, the junior mining sector, and global capital markets for intelligent investors. Now, here is your host, Jordan Roy Byrne.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Daily Gold Podcast. It's been quite a while since we've done a podcast here, and I wanted to get Brent Johnson back on the show. We interviewed him, I want to say last summer, and we talked about his thesis on the dollar and why he was very bullish on the dollar. And if you've been paying attention to financial markets over the last couple weeks or the last couple months, it seems that Brent's thesis, it looks like he's slowly starting to be proven right. And that's why I wanted to get him on to talk about the dollar and what's really going on. Brent, thanks so much for making the time today. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me. You know, I always enjoy talking about markets and speaking with you in particular. So thanks for the invite.
Well, it's my pleasure and also the pleasure of our listeners. Brent, the first question I want to ask you, I mean, we hear about a dollar shortage, and I want to get your explanation for what's really going on here, because a lot of times we hear these, in my opinion, bad explanations that the dollar is the it's the cleanest dirty shirt, or I mean, there's one about the dollar being a horse in the glue factory. I mean, it just does, that doesn't really help anybody. Maybe you can help us here with a proper explanation of this dollar shortage and what's going on here, what is starting to be set in motion, if you please.
Sure, and you know, I'm probably guilty of using some of those really bad analogies at some point, so I apologize. It does get a little technical. I'll try to break it down as simple as possible. But at the end of the day, there's two different ways, or there's basically three different ways that money can get into the system. One, the government can print it, like print physical dollar bills and coins. The other is that banks can loan money into the market. And so you get velocity of money, and that, you know, a dollar gets loaned out and loaned out and loaned out. And the third way is that they can do QE and they can buy bonds, treasury bonds, back from the market and put those dollars that they're buying the bonds with back into the supply. Okay, so we've had many years. Let's just use from 2009 and, you know, anywhere between 2008 and 2010, all the central banks started doing it. But we had a number of years where central banks were doing QE. They were literally printing dollars out of thin air and buying bonds with it. So then they would take those bonds, put them on the balance sheet, and now the money was sitting out there in the system, right? And that went on. And, you know, I will be honest, back in 2010, 2011, 2012, I thought they would do it forever. I didn't think that they would ever stop. I didn't think that they could ever stop. But you know what? They did. In the U.S., they stopped doing it. And not only did they stop doing it, but that all those bonds that they had bought before, they started selling those back into the market. And when they sell those back into the market, the bonds go back into the market and the cash goes back to the Fed. So we have the situation where QE around the world is continuing, but QE in the U.S. has stopped 2 years ago. And not only is the United States not manufacturing, printing new dollar bills, they are also not doing QE anymore, and the velocity of money is starting to pick up, but it's not yet high. So out of those three ways to get money into the market, only one of them, which is velocity of money, is currently happening, and it is still pretty low. So the supply of dollars is not growing. Let's just say it's static. You know, I could actually make an argument that it's falling, but we'll just say that it's not growing, okay? But we still have a situation that the world, as much as they want to, has not de-dollarized. Sure, you will hear about China and Russia are going to enter into an agreement where China will pay yuan for a certain number of, you know, natural gas imports or something like that. You'll see these one-off things. But in general, those are very tiny transactions compared to the overall monetary system. The overall global monetary system, as much as people may hate me to say this, still operates in dollars. So there is still an incredible amount of demand for dollars. And if you have a situation where supply is no longer increasing, but demand is, you get a basically a formula for price to rise. Not only that, but in 2017, the United States government bumped up against the debt ceiling. As a result, they could not sell bonds, and they could not raise cash that way. So we had a situation in 2017 where the government was not one of the people competing for the dollars that were available in the market. They were spending the little bit of cash that they had in their bank account. Now the debt ceiling has been removed, and so they're issuing more debt. Now, a lot of people will say this is dollar negative because the U.S. is going to go bankrupt, and they are absolutely correct. But they are not going to go bankrupt tomorrow. And in the very short term, when the government sells bonds, they are now competing for that supply of dollars that is no longer growing. So you now have the biggest buyer in the world, which is the U.S. government, entering a market where the supply is no longer growing and supply and demand was already greater than supply. So you have a formula where until the world as a whole de-dollarizes, which they will eventually, but they're not there yet. In the meantime, you have a formula for the price of the dollar to rise dramatically. And with you're starting to see this in the emerging markets, Turkey, you know, Spain, Greece, all these countries that have borrowed in dollars, other emerging markets as well, China. They have borrowed in dollars because everybody, me included, thought that the U.S. was just going to print the dollar to oblivion, but they didn't. And now they've gotten stuck, and they're, you know, this dollar debt that they took out has gotten not less expensive. It's gotten more expensive, and it's going to get even more expensive than it is now. And so it creates this vicious cycle where when credit outside the United States starts to break down, it starts to cause, you know, volatility to rise, contagion to rise. And when that happens, then people, corporations, governments start to seek out safe havens. And as much as people hate it, the dollar is still a safe haven for the time being. And so it puts even more pressure on the dollar to go up. So you get into this vicious cycle where it's a vicious cycle outside the United States and a benevolent cycle inside the United States. And it will all end really, really badly. But in the meantime, you know, you've got high supply demand for dollars. It gives a little bit of insulation to the United States and causes a lot of chaos outside of it. So I hope I explained that correctly. I know I was rambling a little bit, but that's the best way for me to explain it. It's really a supply-demand issue.
No, I thought that was fantastic, Brent. And I want to touch on what you talked about there at the end and kind of what's going on with markets now. We see with Turkey, we see maybe that's starting to spread to Italy a little bit now.
Yeah, I said Spain, but I meant Italy. I apologize.
Right. No, right. But I also, I mean, I think it's probably spreading to both. I haven't been looking at the CDS and the bond yields of both. I just saw some headlines about Italy. But anyway, when we see contagion, I mean, that in itself, that also creates demand for dollars, right? Even if it's kind of artificial or a short-term phenomenon. Can you explain that?
Yeah. I mean, these countries, if they're going to trade on the international market, they need dollars to do so. And not only that, but they've entered into contracts. You know, banks have entered into contracts, corporations have entered into contracts, individuals have entered into contracts where they're going to buy a certain amount of goods over a certain amount of time, and they're going to pay for those in dollars. And those people who have sold them those things expect to receive their revenues in dollars, right? And so, you know, when the price of the dollar was low, it was much easier to get them. When the price of the dollar was low and demand was lower, it was easier to get them in supply. When the price was low and supply was greater, it was easier to get those dollars. But as that supply shrinks and as the price goes up, it becomes harder to get those dollars. And so then it's harder for them to satisfy those contracts, whether it's a debt contract, whether it's a purchase order, whether it's a loan. You know, it becomes harder to satisfy that demand for dollars. And that, again, it becomes this contagion where, let's say that Turkey can't pay the people that they owe the dollars to. Well, then whoever was supposed to receive those dollars, maybe they can't pay the person that they owe the dollars to. And it, you know, it gets into this, again, this vicious cycle where when credit starts to break down, money disappears. That's the other thing that a lot of people forget. They'll, you know, they'll say, you know, if the world de-dollarizes or if they just decide to no longer pay their dollar debts, then, you know, they'll just walk away from the dollar and the dollar will crash. Well, ultimately, sure. But in the very short term, it doesn't work that way, because in the very short term, when a debt gets defaulted on, the supply of dollars decreases as well, because in a debt-based monetary system, money is loaned into existence. When the debt starts cascading down from one level to the other, like we had in 2008, it's not just the debt that's disappearing, it's money itself, it's collateral, it's credit that is disappearing. And so supply of dollars shrinks just as fast, if not faster, than demand. And if even if demand is dropping, if supply is dropping even faster, it's a formula for price to rise. So again, I know we're kind of getting into the nitty-gritty a little bit of, you know, economics and supply demand and, you know, demand curves, et cetera, but it really does just come down to supply demand. We have a situation, we have all, it's literally a perfect storm of supply demand on the dollar. I'll take it one step further, and it, you know, going back to the contagion, it goes back a little bit to Triffin's dilemma. Now, Triffin was an economist who said that in order for a world reserve currency to function, the world reserve currency nation must run a trade deficit, and all the other nations get to run a trade surplus. And the reason is because, you know, the world reserve currency country has to supply enough currency to the rest of the world to operate. So the dilemma, part of the Triffin dilemma, came up when domestic concerns outweighed international concerns for the host country of the global reserve currency. And right now we have a president who says America first. I'm going to make America great again. He doesn't say I'm going to make NATO great again. I'm not going to make everybody north of the equator great again. I'm not going to make the Western world greater. He says, I'm going to make America great again, right? And I would be happy to make Europe, Asia, and South America great, but first, I'm going to take care of America. In addition to that, you have a Fed chairman who came out in the spring and said, it is not our job to take care of the emerging markets. Now, that's a little different than in the past. Every time in the past, whenever we had a crisis, the Fed, you know, either open swap lines or lowered rates or whatever it was. Now, they may do that again, but, you know, Powell has come out and said it's not our job to do that. So you have a situation where the price of the dollar is rising, the supply of the dollar is falling, demand is still high and increasing. You have a president who says, I'm going to make America great again to the detriment of everybody else. And you have a Fed president who says, it's not our problem to take care of everybody else. So, I mean, it's literally I could not design a more perfect situation for the dollar to rise. But here we are. And I think it's going to get much worse. And it doesn't mean that there's going to come weeks, maybe a couple months where it ebbs and flows and, you know, the dollar falls a little bit and everybody, you know, sighs a big sigh of relief and thinks it's behind us. But in all of my analysis, I just think this is going to continue to get worse. And you know, heaven help us. It's going to end really badly. I should laugh, but I mean, it really is just a crazy scenario.
Okay. Well, before I get to gold, I do want to just comment that, with respect to Triffin's dilemma, I mean, Trump's policy is going in the complete other direction. Like you're saying, the global reserve currency country has to run a trade deficit, and he wants to do away with the trade deficit.
Exactly. You know, I was a strong proponent of the dollar getting stronger prior to Trump winning the presidency. When he won, it just solidified it for me. And, you know, I did another interview similar to this about a week or so before Trump won. And I thought Trump was going to win. I said, I think Trump's going to win. And I thought he was, but it was still kind of a surprise when it actually happened, right? I think it was still a little bit of a surprise to everybody, even those who thought it was going to happen. And then, you know, like a lot of politicians, they say things, but they never follow through on it. Well, part of the reason that everybody hates Trump is that he's actually doing what he always said he would do. You know, so the fact that people are continually surprised by Trump, I'm a little surprised they're surprised, because he said the whole time this is what he was going to do. And he's doing it. And, you know, you can argue whether he's right or whether he's wrong, but it's hard to argue that he's doing what he said he was going to do. And you might not like the way he does it. You might not like the manner in which he does it. You might not like that he does it at all, but he is doing it. And I don't think he's going to back down from being himself.
Right. Okay. Now, let's move on to gold, because given what you're saying, I think some people might be surprised to know that you're a big gold bull. So I want to know, when does gold come into this picture? Because we know gold is getting pounded right now.
Yep.
When does this situation, because I know you think gold and the dollar are going to go up at some point together.
Yep.
When does
yep.
this situation become bullish for gold? I mean, my guess would be when it starts to impact the U.S. and we have to change our policy, because now, given what you're saying about Trump and Powell, they're fine with just to let things go. But then when it starts to impact the U.S., it seems like that would be the point when maybe gold and the dollar would start to go up together.
Yeah, so I actually think it'll be a little bit before that, but I think that is when it absolutely takes off. So let me explain. So we all know right now that gold, you know, gold's down, what, $200 in the last 6 months or something to that effect, four months, five months. The time that I think gold, and I've always said that for the last couple of years, I've said I think gold, dollar will break out first, then I think gold and the dollar will rise together, and then ultimately I think the dollar will fall and gold will stand alone. So the dollar is just now starting to break out and gold is breaking down. So that's not surprising to me. To get to your point, when will they start to rise together? It really depends on how quickly the strong dollar really starts to cause chaos around the world, right? So right now we can see it manifesting itself in Turkey specifically, and you're starting to see a little bit of in China and, you know, Argentina, it's starting to affect the periphery a little bit, right? But it hasn't yet become a huge crisis. And if you look at gold on just about any valuation metric or fundamental metric or even trading metric, it's extremely oversold in the short term. Now, that doesn't mean it can't get even more oversold. I mean, we're at 1175 today. I can't sit here and say that we won't go lower. But we could have a very hard and fast rally back to 1200 or 1225 or something like that, and then still turn back down when the dollar really breaks out, you know, later this year or early next year. So I think we're due for a bounce in gold because everything is just so extremely oversold, but that doesn't mean that we're out of the woods yet on gold. But I think once the strong dollar really starts to play havoc with the global economy, I think both the dollar and both gold will start to catch a bid. And I do think, you know, despite the, you know, competitive nature of the two, that we're going to have a situation where they rise together. And I don't know whether they'll rise together for a couple months or a couple years, but I do think there will be a longer period of time than many people think is possible that they will rise together. But I'm not ready to say that that's going to ready to happen today.
Yeah, just I want one or two more questions about gold before I let you go. I'm thinking of how to phrase this. So is the reason why you're bullish on gold? I mean, do you think eventually the Fed and the U.S. government will essentially will be forced to counteract the super strong dollar? They'll be forced to print a bunch of dollars, helicopter money or whatever. I mean, is something like that the reason why you're
long term
super bullish on gold?
Yeah, it is. But I don't think it's for the reason that a lot of people think. I think a lot of people think this means that I think that the stock market's going to crash and they're going to come back in. That may ultimately happen, but I think that happens a couple of years down the road. I don't think that happens in the next couple of weeks or the next couple of months. But don't get me wrong, we might have stock market corrections, et cetera, over that time frame, but I don't think we've seen the highs in equities. The reason that when I first started allocating money to gold and client accounts, you know, 10, 12, 13 years ago, it was just as much for counterparty risk purposes as it was for inflation purposes. You know, in many ways, gold is the ultimate asset because it will perform well under either dramatic scenario. Dramatic deflation, dramatic inflation, gold performs really well. So when I bought it for those two reasons. Now, you know, when we got into 2008 and 9 and 10 and we, you know, they started opening the floodgates on printing, I thought we were going to go into a highly inflationary environment. And I thought that would be the reason that gold would pay off. Now, it, you know, it didn't happen from a traditional inflation perspective. We had a lot of inflation from an asset price perspective, but they were actually able to reinflate asset prices without inflating the gold price. But now that we and I thought that they would continue doing that, but when I realized that they were not going to continue doing that and that there was actually a path, however unlikely, for them to stop printing and actually sell bonds back into the market, then I had to start figuring out, well, what does this mean for everything else? And the reality is that there is nothing more bullish for gold than a strong dollar. And the reason I say that, ultimately, you know, not in the very short term, but in the medium to long term, there's nothing more bullish for gold than a strong dollar because a strong dollar quite literally breaks the monetary system. The design of the monetary system is not designed to have a strong dollar. It goes back to Triffin's dilemma. It just doesn't work. And it causes all kinds of problems. And either the system will come down on its own or the central bankers and the monetary authorities will have to get together and redesign it themselves. And under either of those scenarios, that is extremely, extremely bullish for gold. So that's kind of my reason why I am very I cannot imagine going through the next couple of years without owning gold. I mean, it's just an insurance policy. It really is. It's an insurance policy against the hubris of central bankers. I think Kyle Bass said it that way a couple of years ago. And, you know, I'm going to steal that line because it's true. The system is doomed to fail. It's a mathematical certainty. But, you know, as we've seen over the last 10 years, this game can go on a lot longer than most people think. But you know, I'm not somebody who thinks you should sell everything you own and go out and buy gold. But I think you absolutely have to have an allocation to it for an insurance reason, if nothing else.
Right. And I completely agree with you, by the way, about a strong dollar. I mean, I've often thought that when deflationary fears are the highest, I mean, those have been some of the best buying opportunities in gold. I mean, you look at 1929, for example, look at 2008 and then what was it, 2001 or 2002, there were worries about deflation. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Going back to your point earlier about, you know, do I think the Fed's going to come out with QE to oblivion? They may, but I think what's more likely is it'll be in something like the Plaza Accords, or it'll be some kind of joint write down of the value of the dollar. I mean, I think a lot of people are worried that the U.S. is going to come out and unilaterally devalue the dollar sometime, you know, soon. At least a lot of people in the gold world will put that theory forward. I don't think that that's the case. I think the dollar is going to get so strong. I think the rest of the world is going to beg us to devalue the dollar. And, you know, I think Trump will, you know, I think Trump will find that the strong dollar is to his advantage more than the weak dollar is to his advantage. And if he actually does figure that out, heaven help us, or at least heaven help the rest of the world, because there's no bigger club than a strong dollar. And now, again, this will eventually lead to the downfall of the dollar. I'm not somebody who's Pollyannish and think this means that the U.S. is going to, you know, be the world reserve currency for the next 100 years, and we've got this great empire that's going to go on forever. It's actually the exact opposite of this. This is all going to end, and it's going to end very badly. But before that happens, it's going to end in a super spike in the dollar, I believe, just based on the design of the system.
So to sum it up, at least now, you're very bullish on the dollar, but eventually at some point, then you're going to be most bullish on gold.
Absolutely. No question. And that's probably not too – it's probably in the next couple of years. It all just depends on how quickly the dollar does the damage.
All righty. Well, on that note, Brent, this was really excellent. I really enjoyed it. Before I let you go, please tell our listeners where they can follow your work and how they can get in touch with you if they'd like to do so.
Sure. You can email me at Brent, B-R-E-N-T, at SantiagoCapital.com. I have a web page, but it's really just a landing page with my contact info on it at the same thing, SantiagoCapital.com. I'm pretty vocal on Twitter, to many people's dismay. And the address is at Santiago AU Fund. So happy to answer questions, in whatever manner, people want to contact me. I'll do my best to I try to answer every question that I get. I don't always succeed, but I will try. And if you ask me a question and I don't get to it, don't hesitate to ask me again.
Okay, Brent, thank you so much for joining me today. I and my listeners really appreciate it. And, look forward to having you back, in the next several months so we can discuss new developments.
Anytime. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning into the Daily Gold Podcast. For more interviews, editorials, and analysis, log on to thedailygold.com. And for premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.